Blog Talk Radio.
To What's Happening, Blog Talk Radio. And tonight is Tuesday, February 16th, 2021. And this is part two of our discussion concerning the fact that the importance of any history is who tells it. And to date, people of color do not tell their history. And for those of you who are new to our broadcast, this is an analysis of oppression, which requires an anatomy of colonialism and imperialism. We recognize that there is such a thing as fascism, but we know what predated it. And this program is a critique of current events in terms of being able to do something about it. We're not liberals. We don't wring our hands and say, woe is me. We try to do what Sister Lynn required, organize, organize, organize. Brother Ralph Poynter, what's happening?
Good evening, my brothers and sisters. February 16, 2021. And once again, how about real history all the time? If you have been watching the impeachment trial of Donald Trump, you have been bamboozled, as Malcolm X often used the term to chastise those he felt should know better. one of the things is interesting that Rubio has a lot to say, although he may not last long in the changing Florida political landscape. Does anyone remember the name Snowden? Does anyone remember the name Julian Assange? I concluded long ago that our government is a monstrous lying machine. Snowden and Assange prove it over and over again. And you see what's happening to them. Black History Month on top of fictional American history. And I repeat, how about real history all the time? It would certainly be revolutionary. The question is, could the American people tolerate the truth? Another issue for another time. And so, without getting too deep, I just want to say to those who watched the Trump farce, and I'm still working on it, did anyone believe that the government did not know all about the riot at the White House? Knowing that they have every telephone call, knowing that they're listening all of the time, knowing that they know about buses, car rentals, transportation, who's on the highway. Did you believe that this was not a part of the Democratic plan to give Biden some time? Let's not look at the issues that are real to people. Let's not look at a health care program, a national health care program, in the middle of a pandemic, and they got over. People did watch those damn impeachment nonsense, and people have not asked about the things that are important to people. But I see what is happening around the country, the lower paid workers at the fast food chains are demanding $15 an hour. That's what nobody had counted on. Union movement not led by the corporate leadership. And it's going to break out all over because people do need a living wage. People do need health care. And you see, they're giving out all of these loans by companies that you never heard of, secondary companies, and when the economy goes and all of those homes people that have worked for are being foreclosed on due to medical bills, college bills, just paying the mortgage, you're going to see a rise up. But then I wonder, will the left be ready when the people rise up? The so-called vanguard hasn't been leading anything. The vanguard has been following. Will we be able to put a movement together like we did not put together to free our political prisoners? Will we be able to unify, to understand what's at stake and do something about it? Here's hoping, and that's what this program is about. Free our political prisoners and free ourselves to make a movement. Sister Betty.
As always, we start with Professor Louis, because poetry, especially liberation poetry, is the food for the soul. And so without further ado, Professor Louis, as always, we look forward to your inspiration.
What does it mean to be working class? Is that something from out of the past? Do we always got to come in last? That's the question I'm going to ask. What does it mean to be working class? Because today you say you're middle class. You can't pay the doctor, your car needs gas, you're still paying off your college class. Watch over your credit card is never passed. Still, you're middle class this and middle class that. Upper, lower middle class till you eat your hat. Got the gap on your back. You got a little fat. You're still paying for the chair where you just sat. Is it all over just like that? Who stole the good life? Where's it at? Or was middle class just a little dream made up for you on your TV screen where everybody's comfy or so it seems and no one ever eats rice and beans? Because in the beginning, there was just two classes. There was the big money and there was the masses. We did the work. They kicked our asses. Most everything passes. There are still two classes, those who got it and those who don't. We think we're going to get it, but really we won't. Those who own the companies and make the big deals, every deal could cost you a meal. And for real, not too many people hold the power. They make $1 million while they take a shower. There's the owning class and the working class. Where are you at? Are you slow or fast? All you got to do is do the math. If you got a job, you're working class. If you're out of a job, you're really working class. We build the houses, work the fields. We run the hospitals and fix the meals. We make the family and work at home. Sometimes that's the hardest work of all. We work the office. We teach the kids. Everything around us is something we did. No matter what your color or your name, no matter the country from where you came, the name of the game is still the same. And if the owner works, is he working class? Got his laptop and smartphone? He's moving fast. It all depends. First and last, if he owns a bodega or a little machine shop, he works for his money, and he works a lot. He might be working for everything he got, but the guy who owns the corporation, he could work all day. It won't change him. He might be a nice guy. He might be a jerk. He makes his big money off of other people's work. You can't make millions going to work and getting paid. You need other people's work to really have it made. When we punch the clock, he owns the stock. We do the labor, he gets the flavor. We make the honey, he takes the money, because working people make everything. We're the ones make the cash register ring. And when our work goes to someone else's profit, now you got it, and you don't got to ask. That's what makes us working class. And if I talk about class just a little more, your TV says we're starting class war. But the real news has come and gone. The class war is always on. It has been here since the day you were born. We just need to know whose side we're on. If we don't know our own class, take it from the poet. We will always take a beating, and we won't even know it, because your TV is programmed by the owning class. Your newspaper programmed by the owning class. Your search engine programmed by the owning class. When we don't know we're working class, the owning class will kick our ass. They get a real free pass, because you get no health care, get lousy schools. The TV brings your kids up to act like fools. You get no union. You lose your job. You vote for politicians who think you're a slob, because we sometimes forget there's a bottom and a top. Those who got it and those who do not. Better to remember and make no mistakes. If you're not an owner, you're a worker, and that's the breaks. And I bet there's nobody listening here who made $10 million just this year. So before I waste any more breath, before I talk myself to death, let me ask you to act on a fact that has come to pass. Your ass is in the working class. And before we get to another day, when you open your mouth with something to say, before you speak and the words are gone, it's good to know whose side you're on and what it means to be working class. Is that something from out of the past? Do we always got to come in last? That's the question we got to ask. What does it mean to be working class? And one last little question before I'm gone. Tell me, whose side are you on?
Okay, nothing else need be said. Poetry that entertains, and man, does it educate when it's coming from Professor Louis. It's right on the money. Whose side are you on? But we're trying to create a side here. We have so many issues to create sides for. Justice. What justice are you going to support? Sister Betty, who's next?
All right, we missed her last week. We're glad she's back this week. New York City Jericho is in the house, and there is a lot of information. We've got some people who are going to be coming on later, hopefully, to talk about the latest betrayal and the perfidy around freeing our warrior, Mumia Abu-Jamal. But Sister Anne, New York City, Jericho, she's got all the rest of the information. Anne, your mic is open. Welcome back.
Oh, thank you so much, Sister Betty, Brother Ralph. Always an honor to be on this program with this esteemed group of people. Great poem by Professor Louie, I must say. That was fantastic and very important at this time. If we don't know we're working class, we might as well forget about it. Okay, well, I will start as usual with my little report about, in general, COVID-19 infections in the prisons throughout the country. There have been at least 377,497 prisoners who have contracted COVID-19 inside. And of this group of people, which is a very large number of people, there have been at least, I repeat, 2,400 deaths. And it's probably more than that because all these prisons are not accurately reporting. So I wanted people to know that. Now we'll have a little report from Sister Joy Powell up at Bedford Hills, which I was going to talk about last week because that's when she had told me about it. But it's really a horrifying little tale. One of the women decided, for X motivo, you know, we don't know why, that she was going to kill herself. Okay, so she's a little small woman, and she got on top of some tall cabinet, and she had a sheet, you know, and she was going to tie it around her neck and all that. And one of the COs, who happens to know that this woman is friends with Joyce, you know, that they have some good rapport, he asked Joyce to go in there and try to talk her down. All right, so Joyce is in there, and she's talking to the woman, you know, and she's, you know, saying all the right things. And just as the woman is about to step down from whatever high piece of furniture she was on, she gave Joy her hand. She was about to come down. This bunch of COs came running in, a SWAT team, threw the woman on the floor, pounded on her back, put her in shackles, dragged her away, you know. And Joy was saying now, and she was talking to the first CO who did not organize this group, but she was like, well, why did you ask me to go and talk to her? Here she was. She was about to come down, and then she gets attacked, you know, and you know, shackled up and taken God knows where, probably to the infirmary. So, you know, it's just a little illustration of the horrible things that go on every day in these prisons. I also would like to report that I was just reading a wonderful book review by David Gilbert. He did not write the book. He was reviewing the book. And if I can find it here. Sounds really good. And it's a brother who did a lot inside and published a posthumous thing of his writings. And so Dave Gilbert wrote a review of it that was published in the San Francisco Bayview. No, I just want to show it to me now, of course, that I'm like, looking for it. Anyway, that just happened, so that's a good thing. No, in the meantime, we still have, you know, our ongoing campaign for Ed Poindexter. As people know, the billboard is up. It isn't exactly where we thought it was on I-80 because it was too expensive to put it there, so they put it in on a road that goes between the black communities of South and North Omaha, and it costs like $500 a month to keep it up. So it will be up for at least another month. But people need to make those phone calls and write for Ed. Ed has been having dialysis. They used to take him out to an outside hospital for that. He has had such severe reactions after the dialysis, they're no longer taking him out to do it. They're doing it in the prison. And he's going to be requesting, if at all possible, a kidney transplant, which he may or may not be able to even have because of all his other comorbidities and illnesses. He would not survive such surgery as a kidney transplant. But this is happening, you know, as we speak, and as they twiddle their thumbs at the pardons board there in Nebraska and don't realize or do realize and don't care, which is probably more accurate, of the urgency of this case. So that is an ongoing campaign that we have, and we would encourage everybody to please do that. but also encourage people to continue making phone calls for Maroon in Pennsylvania to Governor Tom Wolf. All of this information is at jerichoandy.org, very easy to find. Please go there and take the steps that need to be taken, and because we really do need to help our freedom fighters as they age on the inside in these horrible death camps. Also, our brother Julian Muntakeen is having a Zoom event this Friday at 7 called Future Focus, a conversation with Julian Muntakeen, which should be very interesting, organized by UR Abolition Coalition, the Frederick Douglass Institute, the Susan B. Anthony Institute, the Rochester Decarceration Research Initiative, the Center for Community Engagement, and the Central New York Humanities Corridor. That's going to be on Friday at 7 p.m. Need to register, folk. So you can go once again to jerichoandy.org. You'll see it there. And there's a Facebook event page, and there's also a registration page. So you can, you know, either look at the Facebook event page and go through there, or just go right through our website. Either way is fine. Should be very interesting. You know, Jaleel is a very extremely erudite person, as I've always said, and he's done a lot of work on the inside, and he wants to continue doing work on the outside. He now has a job. He works at Citizen Action New York. So he is going to lend his experience and knowledge of history to discuss the way forward from our present moment on policing, popular resistance, criminal injustice, and our collective imaginings for a more just, more humane future. Should be very interesting. Looking forward to that. You know, we still have working to try to get Sundiata out. We're still working on trying to get Mutulu home. If you haven't already signed the petition for Mutulu's third round of compassionate release, please do so. If you have any money to donate, you can donate it to Jericho, but you could also donate it directly to Mutulu. You could donate it directly to the Sundiata Coley Freedom Campaign. You know, you could donate it directly to Russell Maroon Schultz, because everybody needs help. So, you know, that's where we stand. We have said, and we want to try to make it possible, that this is the year, 2021, to bring all of our political prisoners home. Oh, and the other thing is that possibly Leonard Peltier has finally, they said, you know, he's been trying to get moved forever to a medium up at Oxford, Wisconsin, so he'd be near his family. And they have said, the BOP has said that this transfer has been approved. However, we are not holding our breath because they cannot transport anyone right now due to the COVID situation. You know, there's no Con Air, as they call it. There's no Con Air flying. So that will not happen until probably, you know, sometime in the distant future, I would guess. Maybe not so distant future. Maybe, you know, in September, October, you know, depending on what happens with this COVID. But anyway, Leonard was very happy about that. And Paulette, who is, you know, Paulette Dote, who is part of Jericho and also runs the International Leonard Peltier Defense Committee, she was saying that too. She said he was like on his tippy toes, but we were telling him now, wait, because, you know, right now they're saying that you have been approved and that they're going to do it, but, you know, they've said that before and then it hasn't happened. So
we've got,
you know,
more people in the queue to talk about political prisoners. So what's the next prisoner?
Oh, we have more time to talk about political prisoners? Well,
Do you have anyone else you want to discuss? Because we've got a long queue, and I know you always want to talk about more of the other prisoners that are in dire straits. So before we move on to the next political prisoner report.
Okay, very quickly, do not forget our beloved brother, veteran Black Panther, Kamal Siddiqui. Still trying to make sure he gets to see that wound specialist, extremely important. Call Dr. Alston. You probably won't get to talk to Dr. Alston, but you might get to talk to the warden, 706-855-4700. Once again, all this information is on jerichoandy.org. Please feel free to go to our website and take the needed steps to help our freedom fighters and help to bring them home now. Because what's the call? Free them all.
Free them all. And remember, folks, The Jericho website is our good book. Go to it. Learn.
While we're on this part of the program, we have another Jericho organization from Boston. I believe Brother Kazi's on the line. Brother Kazi, did you want to make an announcement or give us any kind of updates? Your mic is open.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, we hear you.
Hello, all power to people. I have nothing to add. I'm just listening tonight and catching up on. We had a wonderful week of classes with Jaleel last week, and you know, that's going smoothly. And I'm just like listening and catching up on the news myself.
Carry Thanks on, again.
People. Thanks for
hang
the
in
program.
There. We were on that call for Jaleel, Sister Betty.
All right, without further ado, as I said, we're continuing our analysis of oppression, which requires an anatomy of colonialism and imperialism, an anatomy of the American capitalist system. So we've got a little bit of update that we're going to give you on Black history, but before that, we want to go to Brother Joel and see if he has any special words of enlightenment to give us this evening. Brother Joel, your mic is open, and Sister Dolores, hang in there.
Yes, hello.
How are you, Joel?
Yes, hi. How is everybody out there?
Well, we're still hanging in.
People are pretty good. People are spirited and fighting, and that's what we need a lot more of from the rest of the population and especially from the progressive and revolutionary forces, because we're living in a very dangerous and almost unpredictable period right now. We witnessed something of something that was called and is understood to have been a degree of an insurrection in the Capitol building. And we had the comment from Donald Trump. He said that this is only the beginning. And then Democrats, when they ran their riff during the recent impeachment hearings, they also said the same thing, that this is only the beginning. They played a little bit around with Churchill's thing about this is not the end, it's not even the beginning of the end, but it may be the end of the beginning. So they both sort of agree that January 6th marks a pivotal period in the decay and degeneration and increased weakness of a cornered animal, that is U.S. capitalism, imperialism, and there's more of that kind of talk in the air. In addition to that, it is an indication that a lot of the forces of white supremacy and reaction, as well as people that aren't necessarily frozen into that kind of an outlook, but are being swept up or angry because maybe they haven't worked in 2 years or they can't, having problems seeing their family. Others are just confused and angry. There's a lot of frustration by the fact that there's a core of military veterans who have been thoroughly indoctrinated in a certain way and are want to make the United States more of a military aggressor and bring about something of a combination military dictatorship and police state within the country. And there was something of an insurrection, and the ruling class was somewhat annoyed and embarrassed by it, but you could tell by the measures that they've taken, even the Democrats with the with their impeachment, there was only one charge. There was not a systematic overview of all of the crimes against the people that had been committed in the name of the government, of the people, by the people, and for the people over the years. And even in this last impeachment, it was all understood in the beginning that the Democrats could say that they failed because, hey, the Republicans prevented them. And just in case, in the unlikely scenario that the enough Republicans would have voted to impeach Donald Trump, the Chief Justice of the United States, Justice John Roberts, refused to preside over the hearings. And this is a very serious crime in and of itself. It's a total violation of the oath that the Chief Justice took to defend the Constitution, which says that in the event of a presidential impeachment, that the Chief Justice shall preside over the trial, and shall, in that context, legally means must. And he just refused to do it, didn't give any reasons, and the whole establishment let him get away with it. So in the unlikely event that there were 67 votes to convict Donald Trump, he could still say that it wasn't valid because the Chief Justice didn't preside over it. It was not constitutional. So, again, the Democrats and the Republicans have worked together to rig the politics of the country and to operate as a tag team where they pass power between them and where they use each other to push the exploitation and oppression of the system in a more and more intense direction, and more outmoded, in the sense that so many people are suffering now that it's high time that forces came together, not for the kind of chaos tinged by racism and sexism and homophobia that was at the center of a lot of what happened at the so-called insurrection of January 6th, but it's about time that an insurrection developed with exactly the opposite spirit and exactly the opposite program. And we really have to be thinking of that, because it's happening on the other side right now very strongly. And the best defense, and really the only defense against something like that, is an offense and a standing up to fight back, and a preparation to be able to do so, and to organize the people that can be tough fighters on our side. And we know that in prior periods that was going on our side in a more intense degree, and that's what this program is all about, that so many people, unlike what happens on the right, so many people are still in prison from the 60s, from the 70s. Yeah. I heard there was still some people in prison from the 1964 Harlem Rebellion, which kicked off the long hot summers. There are some people still in prison from that. So that's in addition to the really illustrious political prisoners and heroes that rose up and are still in prison, and we have to remember that the revolution is it's the only way that we can save our lives and save the planet, and by our lives, I mean humanity's lives, is that there has to be a real fight back, and people have to be ready to put everything into that, because there are twisted manipulees on the other side that are apparently going in that direction right now. And as I say, we have to prepare ourselves to be not just a match for them, but to beat them. And we have the ability to beat them largely because of the politics, because they are acting out misguided anger that stems from the fact that most of them have been lied to, have been cheated, have been set against each other, have been maybe even injured in various wars, or had relatives killed in those wars. They're angry, but they're misguided because their leadership is not pointing in the direction of a real solution. When they say, for example, that they favor Main Street against Wall Street, we're the ones who can say, yes, appropriated, and there must be a people's rule on an economic and a political basis. So
that is a very wonderful solution, Joel. You've given us a fantastic analysis, and we look forward to hearing you again next week. Would you like to conclude quickly?
Yes, I just want to say that that is another thing, that that as we stand up and wage a fight, a lot of psychologists say that anything that you ever were, you always remain. Many of us went through various schoolyards, and we know that a lot of people still have in their heads the idea that their respect can be won out of going into a fight and giving a good account of oneself in the fight, as many of our political prisoners have been. And that will win the respect of many of the misguided potential stormtroopers and beer hall pushers that went into the Capitol building and are going in the wrong direction. We can, we have the ability, because of the material politics that I pointed out, the need to expropriate Wall Street and the major capitalist class that oppresses and exploits us all, and in that way build a real democracy, that's meaning that the people rule, which is what those Greek roots mean. People rule, people's democracy, and that means the work.
Thank you so much for that, Joel. It is analysis of what's happening, and it's also the solution. Thanks again. We look forward to hearing your analysis next week. Sister Betty.
As we move toward a discussion of the solution, before we go to Sister Dolores, I want to open up the mic for Brother Mark Torres of the People's Pueblo Party and one of the participants and organizers of the People's United Front, because as Brother Joel said, there is a solution to the problem. And as Brother Jalil Montekim has been telling us, we are our own liberators. Brother Mark, you want to pick up from here and give us some of the discussion, the practical way to do what Joel said about we've got to get together, we've got to organize because we do have the solutions. Brother Mark Torres, your mic is open.
Thank you. I was just listening very intently, and the information that's going out on this show is invaluable. I mean, you can't put a price on it. And, I want to thank Brother Ralph, Sister Betty, for leading us in this discussion. But before we go to the, because we have virtual conference coming up on March 20th, I did want to highlight some things. And, this whole thing of fascism is nothing new. It's the Europeans developed capitalism from the Crusades, from invading Middle Eastern countries, which they're still doing to this day. And from that, they were able to enrich themselves, start up banking sectors, growth of towns and trades. And then with the invasion of the Americas and that genocide and the transatlantic slave trade, they were able to gain enough capital to actually develop capitalism, right? And even at that time, and, I teach this in high school, There's a big debate between Thomas Hobbes and John Locke. Thomas Hobbes was like, all power to the state. You got to let the state have all the power, and then people can be prosperous, which is the equivalent of our fascism today. And then John Locke was on the opposite end. He said, no, you need a liberal bourgeois democracy where people have, you know, freedom of religion, so on and so forth. So this debate is as old as capitalism. And, you know, just to highlight that, you know, Trujillo and Pinochet in Latin America were aspects of that Thomas Hobbes or fascist tendency, you know, that plantation tendency. And then in Nazi Germany, Hitler actually got a lot of his inspiration from how native people, African people, and, you know, what used to be Mexican people that got taken over by the U.S., how they were being treated. This whole idea of Untermenschen, right, that Hitler talked about subhumans, you know, he applied that to other white people in Europe, but he got that from the way we dealt with people here. This whole thing of Lebensraum, right, living space. You know, that's the concept of manifest destiny that we use here. You know, the whole idea that all the resources of Eastern Europe would feed Germany is exactly what the British, the Spanish, and the French did throughout the Americas, Africa, and Asia. So, you know, when we look at this history, and I'm glad, Sister Betty, that you point this out, is that, you know, fascism isn't a new phenomenon. What fascism right. becomes is the new face of an old system of oppression and genocide. And, you know, I just wanted to make that very clear tonight because I don't know if I made it clear in the past, but I definitely agree with that perspective. And so we are having, and what we're trying to do is bring all the groups that are doing local work. You know, we don't want to burden groups with more work because we know they're taking on a lot of work already, right? But we want to nurture, support, and coordinate local efforts so that they can take on a national and international character, because that's what we're missing. We're not missing people doing the work. There are great people who come on this show, and they tell us about the work they're doing. But a lot of them are doing it in their own little area, isolated from other people who want to support them, whether it be spiritually, financially, or with sweat, you know. And so when we put together the People's United Front, Frente Unido del Pueblo, you know, we said, hey, we have to coordinate what we're all doing so that we could be more effective, so that we could have a national movement with local, national, and international impact. And so, you know, on March 20th, we're going to have a virtual conference, which will be dealing with racism, sexism, patriarchy, and fascism, which is the modern or the post-World War II face. You know, I know everybody knows the expression, the iron fist and the velvet glove, right? The iron fist is just raw genocidal power trying to crush people. And then the velvet glove goes over the iron fist to make us think that we're not at war with the enemy. And so on March 20th, we invite everybody who's listening and participating tonight to join us in an all-day conference. The morning we'll be discussing issues of racism, fascism, sexism, and patriarchy. And then the afternoon, we want to make it a practical session so that locally, in neighborhoods, in workplaces, in schools, if they're open, we want people to focus to where the people are. That's how we defeat this genocidal drive against us. We got to get the people in motion. And this Sunday also, the 21st, we'll be doing having an organizing meeting. I know Brother Ralph and Sister Betty, a lot of people are going to reach you to try to get the Zoom link for this Sunday coming up, February 21st at 2 p.m. And that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to do the correct analysis, the correct historical interpretation, and then apply that to real life and save lives. You know, we have to take action to save lives. So I want to thank you all again, and I really appreciate and love y'all leadership for us. And, you know, all power to the people. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for that. And as we continue, education, education, education. And I enjoy these programs probably more than anyone else, being educated by those who come on. Sister Betty.
I want to remind people that Brother Mark talked about the link. The Zoom link has been mailed to everyone on this call whose email I have. Everyone on this call, if I have your email, you receive that Zoom link, and I will send it out again probably before the week ends. And again, I want to thank Brother Mark for the tremendous amount of work he does. Many of you will remember his struggle in Harlem to save our public school system, especially up in Harlem as a result of the gentrification that was going on there and the fight against the charter schools. So thank you for having the time to get on, Brother Mark. We really appreciate and appreciate your history and the discussion of the history. Without further ado, as we talk about history, Sister Dolores, your mic is open, and thank you, Brother Mark. Go ahead, Sister Dolores.
Thank you. Thank you. I want to follow through with Black History Month. I heard on the news last week that there is a charter school in Ogden, Utah, that has offered the parents the ability to opt out of learning about Black history. The school is like 70% white students, and the parents said that they were exercising their civil rights to not participate in the Black History Month education. Subsequently, they got a bunch of backlash, and then they retract the offer to the white students and rescinded it, and so now they're going to reluctantly, teach Black History Month in their charter schools in Ogden, Utah. Okay, the other thing during Black History Month, I read online last week an article, and it's entitled Teaching Black History in School, Kids Need to See Joy, Less Trauma, Say Educators. I'm just going to read some of it. With Black History Month underway, some educators are challenging the way Black history is currently handled in the public education system. Erica Boddington, she's the founder and chief executive officer of the curriculum consultant firm Langston League. It's in New York, and it's named after Langston Hughes. She believes that the approach is contrary to how Carter G. Woodson, the father of Black History Month, intended. She says, while Black history is American history, it is still being taught in a very supplemental way. And she adds that it's disgusting for Black history to be dwindled down to clubs, to posters and quotes and random misrepresentations. But that is where most of our schools are today. In addition, she states that Woodson wanted Black history to be taught through nuanced and historically accurate narratives that allow our children to fully understand the diaspora. She is also a former middle and high school educator. And then there's another educator. His name is Jesse Hagelpain. He's a teacher of ethnic studies in a Seattle high school and an organizer for the Zinn Education Project, named after Howard Zinn, the People's History of the U.S., And he talks about the way Black history is being taught in public schools, and he refers to it as abysmal, and states that most of it is reduced to the enslavement of African people. Students learn Black people are oppressed, but they rarely learn about the immense contributions Black people have made to science, mathematics, technology, and the advancement of American democracy through the Black collective struggle. The Zinn Project says that the history of heroic uprisings and battles fought by the enslaved Black people is hidden. So Black kids in the country growing up thinking they have nothing to be proud of, and their entire legacy is one of oppression. Students are also forced to study historically inaccurate textbooks, he says. Examples include the McGraw Hill geography textbook with the caption on the map saying Africans were brought over as workers, implying they were earning wages. The same textbook referred to the transatlantic slave trade as immigration. Another textbook claimed enslaved people were treated like members of the family. These are the types of narratives students are learning in school, that slavery wasn't that bad, and that slavery is all there is to Black history, he says. He's in Seattle, and he's a teacher at the Ethnic Studies Zinn education product. He said they skip over the Reconstruction era entirely and move right to Jim Crow, as if there wasn't a wealth of black abundance that was eradicated by racial violence during that period. They are really just focused on the master narrative. Coined by civil rights activist Julian Bond, the master narrative is defined as a fictionalized account of American history designed to camouflage the true violence of white supremacy and obscure what really happened during the civil rights movement. And then CBS has mentioned that less than half of the U.S. states actually require students to learn about racism. And only Massachusetts and Maryland use school textbooks that mention white supremacy. The public schools also gloss over important areas in black history, it states. The article also mentions that there are pockets of schools trying to deviate from that and adopt historically responsive strategies. The curriculum consultant firm in New York says that they wish schools would focus more on what children are learning rather than spending so much time on standardized testing and policing black and brown children. When students say, "I do not want to be here," you have no counselors. Instead, there's all of these discipline mechanisms to punish and expel. That one of the biggest challenges in the school system is the school-to-prison pipeline. Black students are suspended at four times the rate of white students nationally. Black girls are most disproportionately suspended. This leads to students failing their classes and not graduating. We have a society investing heavily in prisons to warehouse our youth that haven't graduated rather than investing in support that they can get the education so that they can get the education that is needed. Additionally, they're stating that teaching black history cannot be limited to highlighting black trauma. It's important for anyone delivering historical instruction or content regarding black, Latino, and indigenous people to provide nuances. And they're suggesting that what we need to do is to petition for black history to be taught honestly all year long and to request that an emphasis on the Reconstruction era, a transformative and pivotal period in American history that offers more information about black progress, which is often omitted from the curriculum. So, more in length, the article, but... you know, it's very interesting for us to, to look at they're saying, you know, teachers, the kids need to see joy, less trauma, these educators. Okay, so that's what I want to mention tonight. And
well, thank you so much, Dolores Cox. It is very interesting. And when we first raised the issue of black history in the 60s, it was the bourgeoisie black teachers who first announced that type of black history. The real history, they said, was too painful to teach the children. And this was during the time when every other program you looked at was the Holocaust on television
European
Holocaust. I made the same mistake. I say the Holocaust. There were many Holocausts. The European Holocaust that nobody complained about. And when I raised that contradiction to them, they just said I was trying to make children angry. And I said, if the truth makes you angry, then let's tell the truth. But thank you so much for that, Dolores. And we also, as I like to talk about Sister Betty with her stint in the New York City libraries when she carried the original documents to every library in the high school, and some of the resistance she got and some of the joy that people got looking and following up on those original documents. So there's always, within this negative, oppressive thing, there are those fighters. And when we talk about history, I like to talk about Aptekers, two books on the history of the Negro people. There's something, Slave Insurrections. You know, it's just a wonderful, amazing books. But we have forgotten those books because, the Aptekers were communists.
Yeah, I know, of course.
Oh, my goodness. leaders out there in California, Pacifica. Sister Betty.
I was asked once from a black student whether the Holocaust, you know, did it take place in all the states in the United States? And, you know, they hear about the Holocaust so often, they think it occurred in the United States. You know, they don't know nothing about the African Holocaust, you know?
They don't consider the lynchings, the raping, the slavery itself as a Holocaust. My God. Sister Betty.
One of the reasons we start off with Sister Ann Lamb is because she's telling about a Holocaust that's going on right now. Her statistics prove that there is a Holocaust and that we have concentration camps.
Yes, most definitely.
So that people who listen to this program can get away with saying they didn't know the way the Germans tried to do. Without further ado, we're going to go to Brother Tom Syracuse and Sister Dolores. Thank you so much. It's very interesting that these people want to opt out of learning black history. This is why I said to a group of parents the other night when I was on an education Zoom, I have never been in so much of calling it black history. I want American history taught and everything left in, starting with Christopher Columbus and any other colonial genocidists that stepped on these shores. Just teach American history and don't leave anything out. And I don't give a damn what you call it. Just teach everything.
All
right, so if this is that I'm right, you know?
But this would also make American history very different if everything is left. Understanding that the American history is one lie covering for the previous lie, a real mystery.
Before we go to Tom, Sister Ann, we have a request for you to repeat those COVID statistics again, please.
Oh.
Can you pull it up, or do you need us to come back to you after Tom finishes?
I'll let Tom finish and then come back to me. That way I'll have it ready to roll.
Do that. Brother Tom Syracuse, your mic is open. And, folks, I want everybody that's on the call to please hang in there. We have Brother Daoud Andre talking here to give us the real deal in terms of the Haitian uprising that's going on right now. Brother Tom, your mic is open.
Thank you, sisters and brothers. I want to talk about what Dr. King said on April 4th, 1967, at Riverside Church. He said it became clear that the war was doing far more than devastating the hopes of the poor at home. We are taking young blacks who had been crippled by our society and sending them 8,000 miles away to guarantee liberty in Southeast Asia, which they had not found in Southeast Georgia or East Harlem. A nation that continues to spend more money on military defense than on programs of social uplift is approaching spiritual death. Although spoken 45 years ago, this nation is still in a spiritual death. Now, President Biden's military budget this year is slated to reach $750 billion. In 1968, the Vietnam War costs $842 billion. The wars in the Middle East have already cost over $1 trillion. In addition, United States provides military aid to Israel, Egypt, Jordan, Lebanon, Tunisia, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, Poland, the Ukraine, and the Philippines, amounting to $54 billion annually. This military budget is more than the combined military budgets of China, Russia, the UK, France, Germany, India, and Saudi Arabia. Russia and China are depicted as threats to the U.S., but they do not have bases surrounding the United States. An aircraft carrier costs $13 billion, and a nuclear powered bomber costs billions more. And who can estimate what sky wars will cost? Many of these weapons will never be used. Instead of using military personnel to maintain the hundreds of overseas bases, the Pentagon employs much more expensive 600,000 private contractors. The Veterans Administration expenditures have tripled to $216 billion in recent years as veterans return permanently and physically disabled. President Biden has close ties with the Pentagon, and there's no indication that he intends to reduce the military budget, which comprises half of the total U.S. federal budget. While at the same time the economy is in a crisis, rivals the Great Depression of the 1930s. Thank you.
Thank you so much for that, Tom. And as I would like people to recognize, there is a profit in every military budget that Tom has quoted. Thank you, Tom. And remember that military means money for someone, the corporations. It means for your children and mine. Thanks again, Tom. Sister Betty.
You're welcome.
Thank you. We appreciate the history. I think there was something called the Dutch East India Company that funded the colonial slavery. And it was called officially a corporation. So this type of funding of genocide goes back a long, long way. Sister Ann, did you want to repeat those COVID-19 genocidal statistics again from the death camps, which America calls prisons?
Yes, of course. As of the beginning of this week, this is from the Marshall Project, by the way. People can go to themarshallproject.org. A lot of good stuff there about the death camps in our country. There are 377,497 prisoners, at least, have tested positive for COVID-19. By February 9th, at least. That number, 377,497 people in prison. And of that number of people, at least 2,400 people have died. So this is a death penalty imposed on more than 2,400 people by this system not doing what it should do in terms of public health, which is mass decarceration now. So that has not happened. So, you know, this is continuing. This is, you know, every week you can look at these statistics and you can be like appalled. They even break it down state by state, you know. So it's very interesting to say the least, and also very appalling. This is, as you say, a Holocaust going on right now. in the death camps in this country, and it clearly is. Well, there's only one state
from
that has
disasterism to prison capitalism, the industrial prison complex.
Again, you want to talk about minimum wages, you know, who's got the minimum wages in prison? They are officially slaves, okay? Officially, they are slaves, and they may get paid some ridiculously low amount. You want to talk about a minimum wage, okay? Bill Dunn, one of our political prisoners, Bill Dunn, is one of the highest paid prisoners in the federal system, and he makes between $600 and $700 a year.
There you have it. Naomi Klein, take your theories forward, and we see where they all end up. The rich taking from the rest of us. Sister Betty.
And I also want to remind you of what Brother Mark Torres said about the fist in the glove. We're talking about the Democrats, New York State, refusing to, they have the lowest number of people they have released due to COVID. Am I correct, Sister Ann?
Yes, yes. If it's not the lowest, it's definitely one of the lowest numbers, yes.
Mm-hmm.
They have,
so this is
they
a Democratic.
They have refused to admit that prisons are quote unquote congregate settings. So, you know, if a nursing home or an assisted living facility is a congregate setting, so is a prison. You have no way to socially distance inside a prison. It is not possible. You have no way to constantly be washing your hands. If you're lucky, you might have a face mask. You might not. You might have one that you've washed and reused a million times, which makes it totally useless. And you have COs who go in and out without wearing their masks, who take prisoners and escort a prisoner somewhere who may be sick. And they're not wearing their masks, and then they'll come back and escort you, and you may not be sick, and next thing you know, you're sick. Or they'll put prisoners who they know are sick together with prisoners who are not sick to make them all get sick.
All right, we want to connect the dots further. Sister Dolores is telling you how we get a population that does not understand who's on their side and who their enemy is. And the charter schools are hand in glove with the corporations and what we call metaphysical imperialism.
Absolutely.
And the statistics giving us are frightening because cats don't educate mice. They eat them. Without further ado, we're going to connect the dots between fascism at home, fascism abroad, the wars at home, and the wars abroad. Brother Daoud, it is a pleasure and an honor, Brother Daoud Andre, to have you with us.
Yeah, Brother Daoud.
Thank you, Sister Betty. Thank you, Ralph. Greetings to the entire family on the line with us. Thank you for the opportunity to share a little bit about what's going on in Haiti. Since last time, whenever we speak, I've explained that in Haiti we have a puppet government that is installed by the United States. And if for some people who are doing a reading of the constitution that's in vigor in Haiti, this man who was illegally in power because, you know, he was installed by the United States. This was not in any way the choice of the Haitian people. Anyway, by the constitution that's there, he was supposed to have left power in last Sunday, February the 7th. But, of course, he's decided he's not leaving the power, and the United States is supporting him. He's saying that he needs to be there another year to hold elections, and, of course, fraudulent elections. And the United States, the Joe Biden administration, has supported this statement that he has done, and they're saying for them as well, his mandate will be ending next year, February 7th, 2022. What's unfortunate is that many Haitians, just as I'm sure many people in the United States as well, believed, we say falsely, that there was some kind of difference between Joe Biden and Donald Trump. We had always said that the only difference is in style. You know, Trump is a crude, vulgar individual, but he's following the same U.S. foreign policy, basically, that Obama had before him, that Clinton had, that the Bushes had. And many Haitian Americans who had voted for Biden believed that Biden was going to support, quote-unquote, democracy in Haiti. And we had said clearly this does not exist in the logic U.S. government policy to support not just democracy, but to support life for the planet and for people living on the planet. It's about profit. It's about the USA number one. And that is no different, other than style, from Trump. So the Haitian people are fighting this man who is in power, and the United States as well, who's propping up this individual along with Canada, what's called the core group, France, you know, the U.S. Patsies in this game that's being played. A lot of people are being killed in this process by the gangs of the government, gangs in uniform and gangs outside of uniform. He has arrested a Supreme Court judge in the country, fired, which he has no right to do, three of them, and replaced them with his cronies. And, of course, the United States supports this, and they're saying they're waiting for elections to happen in Haiti. We do not expect any elections. We do not expect democracy to come either from the United States or from the puppets of the United States. So basically it's that the Haitian people are fighting, and we thank family from around the world who join us, who support the struggle of the Haitian people. Thank you. I know I called a little late. I was in another meeting. So I want to thank you for the time and the opportunity to share a little bit with the family.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for that, Daoud. Personally, I always say that core group is practicing slavery on a national level. A long time ago, Haiti was taken over by the Europeans after they defeated the French. That's another beautiful history of people rising up, and you have to study the history of Haiti, what they did with their freedom. Anyone could come and apply for citizenship and be a free person. Whoa, was that new in this world?
Ralph, I just want to correct you a little bit. You didn't have to make an application. in the Haitian constitution itself, you know, Jean-Jacques Dessalines, this is 1805, it is clearly stated that any black indigenous person who steps foot on this land, just by virtue of stepping foot on the land, you automatically become a Haitian, and the entire nation will fight to the death to protect your freedom. There was no application.
Was no application. You were the application. How about that for advancement in the world? It's just amazing when you mentioned the date of that and what it stood for. And so I say we should all, and I should study the Haitian Revolution more accurately. Stepping foot on shore. Wow. Sister Betty.
Before Brother Daoud has to leave us, I want to remind people that at a time when the Lynn Stewart Defense Organization was really, really scraping the bottom of the barrel in resources, this organization, Hamakota, they came through with a big donation that made such a difference. And we will always remember their sacrifice at a moment when we were struggling very hard.
We were struggling, and they were struggling in the midst of disaster, national disaster, on top of the unnatural disaster of American European capitalism. And so, yes, whose side are you on? We know who's on our side, and we know whose side we are on. Join us. Study history and participate in the Haitian demonstrations. Dawood, would you like to tell us once again about your demonstrations?
Well, COMOCODA, that's the Committee to Mobilize Against Dictatorship in Haiti. We protest regularly either outside the Haitian consulate in New York, that's 815 Second Avenue in Manhattan, or at the U.S. mission to the United Nations, which also houses State Department office in New York City. That's at 45th Street and 1st Avenue in Manhattan, right across the street. By the way, I want to let family know it's a black woman who is now representing U.S. policy at the United Nations for the Biden administration. And a lot of times, some of us, we put some value that we really shouldn't put on just on the virtue of somebody's skin color. And as we learned with Obama, with Susan Rice, with Condoleezza Rice, you know, every brother ain't a brother, you know, and every sister ain't a sister. That imperialism, you know, the agents of imperialism, of fascism, they come in all shapes, all colors, and it's about what is your politics? What are you working for, life, or are you working for death? And the United States, as a country, as an institution, it's an agent of death on this planet. I understand some people that might be a little hard to swallow, but it is the truth. Not just death for the poor non-white people here in this country, but all, and the political prisoners certainly, but all over the planet. So we ask, whenever we have a scheduled demonstration, of course we will send a message to Ralph and Betty, and we will come on here to ask for your support. But in the meantime, we thank everyone for their solidarity with the struggle of the Haitian people. And in essence, it is one struggle, because once, if there was freedom here and democracy here in the United States, you know, there really wouldn't be a need for us to struggle against U.S. policy, U.S. imperialism in Haiti and everywhere else around the world. So thank you, Ralph. Thank you, Betty.
Thank you so much for that. And I'm just overwhelmed. I'm sitting here with goosebumps and, you know, listening to Dawood speak on the issue of European and American imperialism. Sister Betty.
All right. Before we move on, I want to give everybody who's on the call, all of your mics are open if you wanted to respond to Dawood in any way. If not, we'll move on. Anyone want to make a comment or ask a question? Okay, then what I'm asking is that everybody on your, whatever method you use with media to put out and forward the information on what's happening in Haiti. This is an uprising. We cannot afford for it to not be noticed. And violent media is not carrying the story. Okay, without further ado, before we go to Brother Gomes, I see we have some guests. The last four digits are 1822. Did you want to make a comment? 1822. The first three digits are 347. And the last four digits are 1822. Hello? Okay, and we had another number beginning with 941. 3552. Did you want to make a comment? 914. The last four digits are 3552. Did you want to make a comment?
Yeah, but I just wanted to and say all power to the people. Sister Betty and Brother Ralph, this is my second time in the second week on radio.
Thank you.
And I wanted to express my appreciation for Professor Louis. I wanted to find out if he has a collection of his poetry somewhere, either published in book form or on the web. I would really love to get that. Does he have that?
Yes, he does. He has.
If you Google his name.
If you Google his name, Professor Louis, he has so many tapes. What do you call them? CDs.
MP3s online.
MP3s online that you can just sit down and listen to your heart's content. Better yet, buy some of his tapes. We have them all, I think. And it is just a wonderful thing when you want to get educated and entertained at the same time. Go to Professor Louis. MP3s or stay in touch. We'll make sure you get some of Professor Louis' work. It is wonderful, and I'm glad you asked. Sister Betty.
All right. As you know, we had a crisis involving Brother Louis, so we're going to ask Brother Mamiya, we're going to ask Sister Ann if she can give us a brief update before we go to Brother Val. Sister Ann, your mic is open.
I thank you, Sister Betty. I will be as brief as possible. Basically, in a nutshell, the so-called progressive DA in Philly, Krasner, Krasner just issued on February 3rd, and nobody's been reporting on it, so people didn't know about it, a 125-page brief in which he basically argues that everything that Judge Szabo did during Mumia's PCRA hearings was correct. Was correct, I repeat. In other words, we're not going to let Mumia appeal anything. We're not going to let him present any new evidence. We're just going to, you know, this is what they call in Pennsylvania the Mumia exception. You know, we call it the political prisoner exception because it happens in every state. You know, there were other prisoners who had the same kinds of, you know, wrongful convictions, prosecutorial and judicial misconduct as Mumia had, who are currently out. And there's no reason for D.A. Krasner to suddenly decide to follow along with the Mumia exception, except for the fact that he's currently running for reelection. So people had a demonstration yesterday outside his office. Pam Africa was incensed. If people go to Pam Africa's Facebook page, you can watch some videos, probably of both things. She did an excellent little synopsis of what it was all about with Krasner. And then yesterday they had a demonstration and a press conference from 11 a.m. until 1 p.m. And they have probably posted that on her Facebook page as well. Or you could go to mobilizationformumia.com, I believe. That is the number four, Mobilization for Mumia or FreeMumia.com, to get more information on this. I'm waiting to actually receive the brief itself, but really, really disheartening and disgusting news coming out of the Philly DA's office.
But no surprise, it's about political power. It's about the Democratic, and we have to understand. And we have to make, we understand what the Democratic Party is. We have to make this understanding go out to the people of color who are so loyal for nothing, who practice political slavery over and over again. But it's our job to educate them. Sister Betty.
All right. Brother Val, your mic is open, and thank you for waiting.
Good evening, all. Now, as we continue to commemorate Black History Month, let us again remember those who forget history are doomed to repeat it. And while our schools, media, and political establishments, con-establishments, are ferociously enabling our citizenry to ignore, if not forget, history, it is indeed incumbent on us few true patriots here tonight and elsewhere to ensure that we must never forget. For the ladies here tonight, and listeners also, and female listeners especially, we recall this week the birth of Susan B. Anthony, was born yesterday. What rights Miss Anthony attained and have since surely eroded are anyone's guess. What other rights were sidelined in order for those rights is again should be relegated to another night for discourse. Also, the renowned tap dancer Gregory Hines also celebrates his birthday this week, as does Michael Bloomberg. Cultural contributions are truly sustained by this duo, independently, of course, are also a matter of often contentious song and dance. And while Fidel Castro also took power from Batista in this day in history, February 16th, it is perhaps another giant that contributes much to Black history and original emancipation. Indeed, the great Frederick Douglass, born on Valentine's Day in 1818, evokes more compelling lessons for us even today. A self-taught intellectual, as we all know, just in the likes of Abraham Lincoln, after escaping his captor masters, Douglass spent 2 years in England and Ireland, generating support for the American abolitionist movement. Remember now, Britain had already abolished slavery at this time through buying the slaves' freedom. And while our ancestors, or their masters and opponents, chose the militant alternative, it is worthy to note that it was Frederick Douglass who successfully convinced Lincoln to arm the slaves in the more noble goal of abolishment. It was Douglass who later also actively supported the women's rights movement that led to Susan Anthony's success. Now, today in the media, we also learned that a modern-day Black American of repute, the professor Henry Louis Gates Jr., was well-educated and a professor at Yale University, and as we all know, was arrested a few years ago by a cop in the vicinity of his neighborhood just because he did not fit the profile of the intelligentsia. And of course, you all know the rest of the story. But getting to his new book, Henry Louis Gates Jr. Today has announced a companion book to his upcoming PBS show, which is titled The Black Church. And I think this is kind of important, you know, in this week where many Christians, you know, either listeners or participants of this show, you know, or even former Christians, you know, begin to celebrate the holy season of Lent. So Mr. Gates draws great attention to the history and relevance of the Black Church, quote unquote. He cites many former slaves who have written, "In slavery, you couldn't go down the road and visit anyone. But gathering here, they not only prayed, but after the services were over, they could talk to each other about who might have had a baby up the road, who might have died, who was sold. And the church, Father Tertullian, insisted that the blood of the martyrs was the seed of the Roman Catholic Church, but to Gates, the Black Church is the soil in which Black culture and political action flowered." Of course, the tragic irony of the American experience is that faith has been deployed to suppress as well as to liberate, to exclude as well as to include, to control as well as to free. To tell the story of the Black Church is something of a risk, even to a scholar as secure as Gates. For voices in the arena of racial justice have long diminished religion as overly safe and accommodationist. Yet Gates writes here as a historian, and the historian can chronicle progress, assess its origins, and commemorate its course while noting its incompleteness. Violent insurrection would have been a form of racial suicide. Insurrection meant death, Gates writes, so Black Americans use what was at hand, namely faith and religious-based appeals and actions in their struggle for freedom. Relying heavily on the voices of myriad scholars and clergy members, Gates traces the story even before Jamestown. The foundation of the African-American spiritual journey was formed out of fragments of faith that ancestors brought with them to this continent starting 500 years ago, not just 400. Gates chronicles the Spanish New World and describes the strands of belief and practices from Roman Catholicism to African religions to Islam that created the basis for the American Black Church. At its best, biblical religion is about reversal and transformation. the most venomous messages for black people in a white supremacist America. Never confuse position with power, the Reverend Otis Moss, a Chicago pastor, says in Gates' epigraph. Pharaoh had a position, but Moses had the power. Herod had a position, but John had the power. The cross had a position, but Jesus had the power. Lincoln had a position, but Douglas had the power. Similarly, for Woodrow Wilson, had a position, but Ida Wells had the power. George Wallace had a position, but Rosa Parks had the real power. Lyndon Johnson had a position, but Martin Luther King had the real power. We have the power. Don't you ever forget. I just want to wish everyone a happy Shavuot Tuesday, you know, which also is called Pancake Tuesday. And of course, you all know that today in the news we also learned that Aunt Jemima, you know, the infamous logo of Aunt Jemima is going to be changed soon. Again, after 130 years, what took them so long? But hey, this is America. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Gomes. We should have you on more with more time because we talk about education, and you epitomize education and entertainment. My brothers and sisters, thank you for listening. Look forward to hearing from all of you next week. Thanks again, and good night. Valentine's Day, with great love, as Ernesto Che Guevara had the love of the people, so much so that he fostered revolution worldwide. The Cuban people died in great numbers in Africa. Thank you for love. Thank you so much, and good night.